The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the seventh tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the seventh tradition is Adam.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Adam. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, guys. It's good to be here. I want to thank Cynthia for asking me to speak. It's an honor and privilege to speak at my home group. And as was mentioned, I'm speaking on the seventh tradition. So normally when I hear people talk about the seventh tradition, we talk about money. And it's certainly going to be the majority of my talk tonight. I'm not that original. And, you know, when I was new, I know I wasn't as involved in the tradition. So if you guys space out or fall asleep, you can see me after the meeting. I'm happy to repeat myself. So we are talking about money, which, you know, having done a little research about the tradition, you know, I realized that it's an important conversation to have. You know, a lot of people have different relationships with money and unmanageabilities and fears and resentments about money. So, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about it. And, you know, I just think it's particularly important to have the discussion. So, again, I'm honored to be here. So, seventh tradition, it states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. That's the short form of the tradition. We get a little bit more detail when we read the long form, which we often do at the Tuesday meeting. So let me do that. The long form of the seventh tradition states that the AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligation whatever is unwise. Then, two, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. So I guess an interpretation of that, I want to give you guys, you know, just the way that I read it. Basically, there are two main principles in this long form of the tradition. First being the fact that we're self-supporting at every level of the service structure. So that would be the groups, the districts, the areas, all the way to the general service office. So we're self-supporting. Why is that important? You know, I mean, the early AAs, you know, reading the literature, you know, I've read that the early AAs found it important to show the rest of the world the integrity that we had. You know, when I think about my own recovery, you know, I wasn't thinking about being self-supporting when I walked in these doors. You know, I was thinking about where I was going to get my next drink. And, I was thinking about the fact that I didn't want to live anymore and I couldn't leave my apartment, I couldn't go to work, you know, I wasn't thinking about bathing myself, you know, I wasn't thinking about any of that. So the fact that we can show the alcoholic coming through these doors today, the beginner, that we take care of ourselves, we're responsible for our own recovery and accountable for our sobriety is important, you know, in terms of donations, you know, that's another part of being self-supporting, you know, that part of AA history did deal with outside donations, and luckily, decades ago, they realized that was going to be dangerous for us to accept. So, you know, basically, the idea there is that if we're accepting money from outside organizations, they could start having control or power over our fellowship, and we could lose that spiritual nature that we have here. It's a spiritual program, and all we really need to do is carry the message, you know, of recovery to the next alcoholic. So, you know, accepting outside donations would be a dangerous thing for us. The second principle in this long form of the tradition that's clearly stated is about collective poverty. So, you know, they're talking specifically about prudent reserves and the treasuries of AA and how we deal with the money that gets collected through the seventh tradition. So, you know, they basically learn from experience and trial and error that collecting too much money is also a dangerous thing. And they had to make a decision. This is back in the 40s where AA as a whole had to make a decision as to whether we would be rich or whether we would be poor. And there was a point that we came to a point where we knew that there were a lot of outside donations that could start coming in and it would make AA rich. So after much heated debate, they realized that it was, you know, collective poverty was the best policy for us. Basically because it would divert us from our primary purpose, you know, and that actually happened. So, you know, some groups and AA entities were going out starting hospitals and treatment centers and not focused on just carrying the message to the next guy coming in the door. And it didn't work. So that's why we have the seventh tradition and why it's important, at least that's my interpretation. So how is it relevant to us in this room? I actually am the one of the treasurers. Thank you. I'm one of the treasurers for Atlanta Group. I'm co-treasurer, so Amanda's the other treasurer. Peggy's the CFO. Three of us, we manage the financial affairs of... that's right. No, we all do a great job. Work together. So we manage the financial affairs of the Atlanta Group. So, you know, we have seven meetings a week. There's a lot of expenses that we have to deal with. And you know, we're basically dealing with the income and the expenses of the group as a whole. You know, an example of that would be the rent that we have to pay to rent the space right now to keep the lights on for those new guys, that are coming in the door, right, to carry the message. That's how we're being self-supporting and carrying the message. You know, you guys probably enjoyed, or a lot of you enjoyed the hospitality that we provided, you know, when you walk in. You know, all that costs money, so, you know, we deal with all the expenses for the coffee, the milk, the tablecloths, the cups, you know, you name it. You know, there's a long list of expenses that we cover, and we cover it. All the seven tradition contributions cover that, so we are self-supporting. And, you know, we're going to read the tradition again in about 10 minutes, and we're going to pass the basket, so you know that, you know, you can be confident that money is being well spent. So after we meet our expenses, then, you know, God willing, we have extra money that we can actually build this prudent reserve. So we have a prudent reserve. I think it's about 2 months right now. It's usually somewhere between 1 and 3 months, which is pretty small when you compare it to other groups or other entities in AA. GSO, for example, carries 9 to 12 months of prudent reserve. Other groups I've seen somewhere between 3 and 6 months of expenses, and basically, I mean, it doesn't really matter what it is as long as it's something reasonable. You know, it's basically once you decide what it is, you want to stick to it. And the tradition specifically that I read today is talking about the money that we collect after the prudent reserve has been met. So we're specifically instructed to basically push that money down the service chain. So that's what we do at Atlanta Group is we contribute to the other service entities in AA. Thank God that we have the ability to do that, and we have extra money that we can do that. So we contribute to Intergroup, GSO, MGSM, and CINI. So GSO, MGSM, and CINI are all levels of the general service structure in AA. More than half of what we contribute down that service chain is to Intergroup, to New York Intergroup. Basically, the General Service Office, if you guys don't know, General Service Office prints all of our literature. So if you look at that literature table back there, all of that is taken care of by GSO. It's the central location for AA worldwide. And groups around the world contribute to GSO along with the Atlanta Group. MGSM is the county, Manhattan County, so all the groups in, or ideally all the groups in Manhattan will contribute to that level of general service, and those groups meet and try to carry the message as a county. And CINI is the area, so that's the southeast New York area, so that's all the boroughs in New York and the counties around New York. So they also try to carry the message in their own way as well. You know, I don't want to get too much into it, but, you know, those are the different levels that we contribute to. One thing that I did want to leave you guys, since I probably only have about 2 minutes left, is just the challenges that we face as AA when it comes to money. So specifically Intergroup, some of you may have heard Intergroup is actually having some serious financial challenges right now. New York Intergroup, they have a main event called the Bill W. Dinner Dance. That's their main event to raise money. Last year it was not as well attended and successful as they had hoped. They also had some unforeseen expenses that were related to like computer viruses and technology. So that really set them back. And then this year they're under, you know, they expected more contributions. So they're getting 20 to 30 minute. Sorry, that's 1 minute. Got it. 20 to 30% less of 20 to 30% less of what they expected in contributions. So they're actually dipping into their prudent reserve to pay the rent at Intergroup. You know, where we you know use those services, right? We are self-supporting, so we pay for those services. We use those services, and we're having difficulty there at Intergroup. So, you know, anybody can contribute to Intergroup. Personally, I'm trying to contribute more, and that's you know that's something that I'm going to continue to work on in my own recovery. But that's one thing that I wanted to mention. And then, Secondly, General Service Office also is going to face some challenges potentially because anything that doesn't cover the expenses from all the group contributions and individual contributions is covered by the literature sales. And as technology moves forward with the digital age, people, we're not sure how things are going to go, but people might not be buying as many books. So if we're not bringing in as much money from the book sales and groups aren't covering all the contributions, how is that going to play out? It could mean higher prices for books or less services and whatnot. So I'm out of time. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Sandy.
Hi, I'm Sandy. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Marla for asking me to speak. I think I want to thank her. my sobriety date is 10/24/11. My sponsor is Joan M. Atlantic Group is my home group, and I love you all. I love this program, and how did I get here? How did I get here is what I want to tell you. I was 39 years old. My mother died, and that's when I had my first drink. Not only was it my first drink, it was my first drunk. From the very beginning, there wasn't enough alcohol for me. I discovered that this was a way to disappear. For me, it was becoming invisible. I just wanted to be invisible. And I grew up in a generation which, well, our parents drank. That's not what we do. We don't drink. And so, my group of friends were busy with other things. But being a very high-strung, highly productive, competitive, perfect person that I thought I was, I didn't get into any of those things. So I had, I met and married my high school sweetheart. I raised three amazing kids, and they were 6, 8, and 10 when Mom passed away. So now it's becoming a regular thing. I'm feeling sorry for myself. I'm feeling like my luck's run out. This is it. I've been very blessed. I always had a feeling like there was a God out there, and for me it was like, where are you? Like, I've lost so much. It was a huge loss, and so loss is a big part of it. So it wasn't very long before I was buying wine daily, and it had to be French wine. It had to be nice wine, and then it was like a whole bottle of French wine. Then it was getting ridiculous, and then I realized quickly that, like, after the third drink, who cares, really? Who cares? And so I would go to different stores, and I would pretend like I'm having this party, and I've heard other people say that. Well, what do you think? And I would act like I don't know anything about wine. Like, what do you think? What do you like? What's on sale today? And do you deliver? which is a very New York thing. So anyway, so now I'm drinking. Now we're going to bars. My husband and I are an amazing team, and we were a team in the drinking. So we went to bars. We became very friendly with the bartender. I don't know about you, but we made friends with the bartender. Our glasses were never empty. They had our number. So they treated us well. We treated them well. Now, being a very perfect person, somebody that had to have everything looking good on the outside, I would prepare for the inevitable blackout. Like, this is now getting to this point where I'm definitely going to black out. So I need to have my pajamas ready. I have to wash my face, and I have to know where I left my wallet. Everything is like premeditated because I know I'm going to pass out and come to. This is how I roll, I'm going to pass out every night, and then I'm going to come to at some point. And then it was getting to the point, like, is the dog home? Let me just check if we got the dog home. And the dog was in the crate. I don't remember him getting in there. He must have locked himself in, but he was in, the dog was in the crate. Anyway, so we used to go to the bar, and I would talk to this really nice guy, Mike, and I never remember saying goodnight to Mike. He and I would talk. We'd have lots of chats about all kinds of things. I love the arts and culture, and we would talk about every show, every museum, everything going on in the big world. to be honest with you, I had a very small world, but we talked a lot about it. We dreamed. They say that we're dreamers. So we dreamed a lot about where we would go if we were sober. Anyway, it was getting ridiculous. Now I have these three children, and I have to be very careful not to get out of control around them. So now it's my daughter's birthday. Toni is my youngest, and she's having a birthday party. And her friends like to party. And I get there, and I'm early, because I'm always early. I am always very early. I'm afraid I'm going to get lost, so I have to be there first. So I got there early, and Tom, her boyfriend, started making me these vodka drinks. I was plastered. It was 7:30. 7:30, and I am plastered. I can't see. So now she lives in a walk-up. At this point, I cannot get down the stairs. I just sit down at the top of the stairs and say, someone's going to have to like get a forklift to get me home, because I can't. And that was pretty much it. I said, okay, now I've really made a fool of myself in front of my children. This is not okay. So I came into the Atlantic Group. This is where my higher power came in, because out of all the meetings we have here in New York, I found the Atlantic Group. Sunday night was my first meeting, and I sort of fell in. I sort of poured myself into a seat, and I sat and I listened. And there was a star out there, because it was very unusual for my sponsor. She wasn't my sponsor yet, but she was called up. It's a call-up meeting, and different people randomly are called up to speak for 3 minutes. And this woman, I'm looking at her, she looks just like my mom. Oh, yeah, she's nice. So my husband is poking me. He said, go get her number. So I did. Now, it turns out, Joan is not my mom. Not at all. A sponsor is not a mom. But she is amazing. She has helped me on my spiritual journey and continues to do that. I mean, even today, I meet her after this meeting every week. We sit together and we talk. But she is constantly reminding me that I'm not in charge, that there is something out there greater than us that is helping us, that has our back. And this is what's carried me through. I am not perfect. You know, it's funny, you know, it's coming up on 4 years, God willing, for me. And emotional sobriety is what I'm looking for here. I really am. And I am a person who loves watching other people, how they act in the world, both sober people and people who, like us. One day I go to a meeting. It's not one of our meetings. And I get there early, as I'm apt to do. And I get myself a nice seat by the door in case I don't like it. Maybe I don't like it here. So I'm like right by the door, and I have this very, very comfortable seat. People are drifting in. They're coming in late. They're making noise. Somebody's talking. Do you see somebody's talking? And I am working myself up to a pitch. Like I'm willing these people. Please behave. Please, do you know how to behave? I don't know. Well, then a woman comes in, and she's smacking me with a chair to get... I was in her seat, apparently, and she was making it very obvious, but she was pushing me, and I was very upset. It took all I had not to say anything, but I said, okay, let me just be sober here. This other woman on the other side of us, sobriety, this is a sober, emotionally together person. Can I help you? She is helping this lunatic get the chair together. This is what sobriety is about. Just be calm. Let people be people. It's really okay. That's what I want to say to you all. It's really okay. I have to tell myself this. I have to be reminded. It's really okay when I'm on the train and people are people. It's really okay for people to be people. I still have a lot of learning to do, and I learn something every day. I love these meetings. Every night we have a different format, and I can't tell you how much a big book study does for me. I've learned so much there. It's a treasure, and we're so lucky to be here. I mean, if you're new and you just stumbled in here, you just walked in and it's your first time and you're overwhelmed, just stay. You really should stay. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I'm so blessed and I'm so thankful for all of you. Thank you for my sobriety.